You've undoubtedly heard the statistics that many young people raised in Christian homes, involved in church all the way through their high school years, are heading off to college and falling away from the faith.
Student ministry as we once knew it will not get you the results that you want.
Steve Wright is a youth pastor at a church in North Carolina. Is there something broken? Steve Wright thinks so.
If we just continue to say, well, you know what, I've got kids and their parents aren't involved, that tells us that we're raising generations that do not know how to parent.
Bye, Mom.
We cannot do the drop-off mindset anymore. We have got to get this right as a church.
This is Family Life Today for Monday, August 18th. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. If youth ministry is broken, it's going to take parents and churches coming together to fix things. Stay tuned. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us on the Monday edition. We began a conversation last week that we're going to pick up on again today, talking about youth ministry, student ministries, and what churches are doing in that regard, because we believe that it's time for parents and students and churches to all be working together and pulling in the same direction. And I'm a little concerned that some of our listeners who heard us talking about this last week may think, it sounds like we're down on youth ministry or youth pastors, and that's really not the case. You're not down on youth pastors or youth ministry, are you?
No, I'm bullish on youth pastors. In fact, so much so that I think for the first time ever, you and I invited a dozen or so to join us here in the studio for these broadcasts. Hi, guys.
Hey, what's up, man?
Thank you all for coming.
And so if we're down on them, we're in real trouble, Bob.
Yeah, it could be a hostile takeover.
Outnumbered. No doubt about it.
I don't know if you were counting our guest as one of those dozen or so who's in the studio with us, but we have a guest who's a youth pastor.
Steve Wright joins us again on Family Life Today. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Steve is the assistant pastor of youth ministry for Providence Baptist Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. You'll notice the accent that he's not from Brooklyn.
There is a little bit of a... Did you grow up in Carolina?
North Georgia.
North Georgia. There's a little bit of a... I was going to say kind of a Forrest Gump sound, but I guess I don't want to go there. I don't mean to be offensive.
Some people say Southern drawl.
Okay, I'll go with that. Yeah. That's nicer than Forrest Gump.
We'll Southern sophistication.
There you go.
He and his wife, Tina, have been married since 1989. They have three children, Sarah, William, and Tyler. I had the chance to meet Tyler a little bit earlier and
gave him
a copy of my book, So You Want to Be a Teenager. That's kind of fun to always
call it your book. Your kids helped write that book with you.
I'm sorry. I took too much credit there. Rebecca and Samuel both helped write that book, and it's all about helping a preteen move into the teenage years. And really, Steve, that's what your ministry has been all about, is helping these teenagers move into adulthood and face adult challenges. You state in your book, and I didn't mention the name of the book, but I got to mention it here. The name of the book is Rethink, Decide for Yourself, Is Student Ministry Working?
Right.
And if parents aren't asking that question, they should be, because this is a key question. But you state in your book that we need to rethink this idea of youth ministry. Earlier, we talked about how parents are to rethink youth ministry. You know, we do have a dozen youth pastors here in the studio with us. Where should a youth pastor start in rethinking his ministry to his young people?
Well, I believe that process begins with theology and the understanding of the two institutions that the Lord has given us. Obviously, we see clearly that God in the Old Testament has given us family. We see in the New Testament over and over that the Lord was gracious in giving us the church. And you know, as we read specifically in Acts 2, 42 through 47, there's a place there in Scripture where we see that they are gathered in the temple, reading Scriptures, they come home, and there's a continuation of what happened in the temple happening in the home. And so you see a true partnership there in ministry. And without that knowledge and without that theology guiding us, I just think that the foundation we build on is weak. if we do not have that supporting us. I think a lot of times in student ministries, and I was certainly guilty of this, I would talk a great game about a partnership with parents, had it on my website, had it on my newsletter and things that went out. And of course, every time I stood in front of my parents, I talked about this great partnership. The problem with this partnership was that it was not a partnership, because we would bring all the parents together in a room, tell them what we were doing for their kids for the entire year, and basically tell them that we'll see you back in here next year. If Goodyear or Starbucks or whatever other organization had partnerships like that, they would all be bankrupt. It's sad that I operated with that type of mentality, but you know, I honestly, probably in a lot of instances, I didn't even know half the parents' names. And then also on the parent side, how were they partnering with us as a ministry when the desired result was to see their children to be a mature believer in Christ, but they really had very little input or direction into our ministry that was actually impacting their own children. Hmm.
You tell the story about parents who built into the lives of their son, John. His name was John Patton, who actually went on, because of how the parents built into his life, to make a great impact for Christ.
Right. That's an incredible story. I think maybe most of our listeners would remember that story, or at least the island, Vanuatu, from the Survivor series. And it's interesting that even today, that if you go back to that, those islands, that 84% of those there still identify themselves as being Christians, from the Christian faith. And when John Patton showed up there to minister, it was, you know, cannibalistic, very rough environment. And soon after he arrived, his son died and his wife passed away. He ministered in an incredibly tough situation, but when you look at the way that he was raised and the investment that his mom and dad made in his life, it was incredible. And one of the things that I tried to bring attention to in my book as I was talking about John Patton was, look at his youth pastors. Obviously, John Patton was probably raised before modern youth ministry was even created, but as God designed it, the people who God wanted to be his youth pastors were there. They stepped into that role and they were ready to play it.
How many kids in your youth group today do you think are growing up with a mom and dad like John Patton had? I mean, if on a percentage basis, let's just get to the reality of this. How many moms and dad are doing the discipling work with their children, do you think?
Well, it's funny that you ask that question. I have to be kind of careful how I answer it. Because
yeah, you do, because you're employed by these folks, right?
That's right. But, you know, a few years ago when we started this process, I asked my supervisor, Leon Tucker, this same question. I said, Leon, how many moms and dads do you think are intentionally discipling the children in our church? His answer to me was probably in the neighborhood of 5 to 10%. Hmm. And so as a youth pastor, hearing that, and as we began to have conversation about that, you know, obviously none of us were satisfied with that result. And then we said, what can we do to advance the ball? I think what happens a lot of times in this process is we want to hit a home run and we don't want to get a base hit. And as a ministry, we decided then and there that, you know what, if it's 5-10%, that may be where we are, but we will advance the ball. And if that means next year we're at 15%, a few years later, 25%, 30%, we want to continue to work on that so that the majority of our parents are discipling their kids.
And of course, when I ask the question, we're thinking about intact families where a mom and a dad are both there to help, but you've got a lot of kids who are in your youth group.
That's right.
Where there may be a mom or a dad or grandma or grandpa or
no one.
No one. Some configuration. There may be a mom or dad home, but they're just not able to connect for whatever reason.
Right. And I think part of the thing, when we know that to be true, that even screams to us louder that we have got to get this right as a church. Because if we just continue to say, well, you know what, I've got kids and their parents aren't in this role, or they don't want to play this role, or the parents aren't involved, that tells us that we're raising generations that do not know how to parent. And so that screams to us even louder that we need to move to a biblical pattern.
You're saying then at that point that what the church needs to be about is equipping moms and dads to be successful in their assignment.
That's right, to be faithful.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Well, one of the things that we've done in our ministry is we've decided to, with every single youth event that we do, we're going to do one of three things. We're going to resource parents, we're going to train parents, or we're going to involve parents with every single event that we do. So that every single thing that we're involved in, if it happens in student ministries, there's a parent component.
You're not competing with parents. In other words, you're really trying to complete parents and equip parents.
What we're saying to parents as they're coming into our ministry now is we cannot do the drop-off mindset anymore. It's not working. It's not effective. Student ministry as we once knew it will not get you the results that you want. And so because of that, as our students move into our ministry, from day one, when we give out a calendar for our sixth graders, every event that we have planned that year for them is an event that their mom and dad attends with them. Hmm. Now, what do we do with the ones who they don't have a mom or dad that's involved? Well, at that point, that's where we have to be faithful as a church to help find mentors. We have to find other couples that can step up into that role. And one of the things that this has helped us identify is who those kids are at an earlier age.
So if you're having, how many kids in your whole student ministry program?
400.
So you got to have 400 moms and dads or mentor substitutes involved in the lives of these kids throughout the school year.
That's right.
And they're doing it? You're getting them to do it?
Right.
Okay. Well, how do you do that?
Well, I think it's been a process. I don't think you arrive there overnight, and it's not 100%, you know, winner takes all kind of situation. But for us, we look at success is, again, to advance that ball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, biblically, we want all of them to be involved. The ideal, what God's designed, we want all of them. And you know what? If some of them are maybe at a level two and they're not filling that role as great as they could be, we want to help them where they are.
So a student can still be involved in an event if a mom or a dad or a mentor doesn't show up. You keep going, but you're just trying to press as many moms and dads into this as you can get.
That's right.
But you do have 400 mentors involved in this program right now.
Well, and most of those are the parents.
Right.
Right.
But how long did it take you to get to a mentor for every child?
Well, we've been doing this for hitting it hard for about 6 years.
Okay. So you can get there.
Sure.
You know, this sounds like a ton of work for a youth pastor. I mean, one of the things you talk about in your book, Rethink, is how many youth pastors today are already operating at max speed.
Yeah, I just looked over. A couple of them are asleep over here. They're working so hard.
And I'm thinking, now I'm supposed to corral 400 parents and get them involved? And I mean, I'm just going to go back and get a job at the sporting goods store and forget ministry.
Well, I think the thing that's encouraging to youth pastors as they're hearing this message, number one, I think they're energized to know that they've got an ally that God intended to partner with. Secondly, it does require a lot of work up front because you're having to think differently. You're having to probably leave behind a way of thinking that you've come to embrace. For example, let me give you just a real quick idea of what we're doing with our seventh grade ministry. When our students come in and at the beginning of the year and we meet with all of our seventh graders and all of our seventh grade parents, we share with them that there are two primary things that we're going to try to accomplish with you this year. Number one, we give them a really nice journal. It's leather journal. And we ask our parents when we give them this journal, say, look, this year we want you to write down in this journal the prayers that you have for your son or daughter, scriptures that are meaningful to you, life lessons that you want them to learn. As you're facing issues, we want you to write in this journal all year long. Okay? Secondly is the passage trip. And this is a trip that the student helps plan with their parents. And I think this illustrates it perfectly because this trip that they plan, the parents plan it and the children plan it. The journal that we're going to be giving the students at the passage trip, the parents all year wrote in this journal. Mm-hmm. So if you look at ministry in those terms, I mean, what youth pastor wouldn't want to have the two main key components of a seventh grade ministry to be things that they're really not even having to plan?
You're setting mom and dad up to have this spiritual experience with a son or a daughter. You're just the facilitator for the ministry that's going to go on as mom and dad get together with their student.
That's right. And, you know, you think about something like that and you go, you know, I've probably got some dads or some people in my ministry. They wouldn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. They're not writers. And I think back of a story of a dad who was really resistant to us, you know, didn't want to write, didn't want to really go there. And his wife shared with me about 3 or 4 months after the process began and said, listen, my husband takes that journal after the kids go to bed, lays it on his chest every night, weeps for about 10 or 15 minutes before he can even begin writing. And so what happens, not only is this spiritually healthy for that child, but it's also incredibly healthy for the dad who now begins to think in terms of passing that legacy onto their child.
But what about the student? Again, I guess I know the answer here. There's going to be a mentor involved. I'm thinking of the student who doesn't have a dad writing down journal stuff every night, or they get to the trip and dad goes, oh yeah, I didn't have time to do that.
All right. That's a great question. And Bob, this is why I think it's so important for us to keep asking that question. I don't think we should run from the hard questions. I think we should hit them head on because there's some things that we've got to address. But what happened with us for the longest time in student ministry is we would have that question and we would always think about those kids in our ministry, well, what about this situation? And because we were so afraid and didn't really know how to handle that situation, we would not allow all of the other students in our ministry to be blessed by the fact that they did have a mom and dad there and that they did have that in position. Does that make sense?
It does. So you're saying, rather than looking at the exception and saying, we can't do it because of the exception, you do it and then figure out how to resolve the exception issue.
Right. And you look at it from a biblical perspective and say, man, God has called us. We've got to involve these parents. And you know what? If we have those two or three kids, I'll give you an example. I have a young man that my wife and I have spiritually adopted who lives in Belize. For the last 10 years, Lionel Rodriguez has really been trying to work through a lot of these issues of growing up to be a young man. Mm-hmm. And although he lives in a different country, he does not have a dad in his life that's playing that role, but he's someone that I'm a spiritual mentor to, that I've written to, that I journal, that I call, that I pray with. I've flown him up a few times. He's spent time with us for the holidays and things like that. When I found Lionel, he was 12 years old, living at a refugee camp, and was a young man who spoke 5 languages fluently. But he had no direction. But God laid him on our heart to model for him what family could look like, what Christ could look like. And in December, Lionel Rodriguez will graduate from the most prestigious school in Belize, Belize University, because we were able to pair him up. And in this situation, it just happens to be my wife and I with what it could be. So we don't run from God's design.
Yeah, Steve, and that illustration of just how you took your own exhortation to parents to heart and picked up a young man to mentor is a great illustration. And I'm thinking back to that father who didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Who put that journal on his chest.
Yeah.
And how, I don't know if it was the weight of that journal on his heart that caused him to begin to weep. But he began to feel his responsibility, and I thought, you know, that really is a great picture of what should happen in the lives of every parent. They need to feel the weight of that responsibility. In fact, that's spoken of in Deuteronomy 6. I just want to read this because it literally is speaking of the same thing. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up."
Yeah. What's so fascinating about that scripture, too, is when you look at the Orthodox Jews who've taken that Shema passage and quote it twice daily, when you think of all of the things that they could have really keyed on, the creation account, Psalm 51 with repentance, the passages of the Messiah to come. The one thing that they said we are going to make central is this Shema and quote it twice daily.
Yeah, and I have to say, as Barbara and I are the parents of 6 children who have now flown the nest, so to speak,
right,
that this is the part I miss the most. Every day when I would rise up, it would be a weight, a heavy weight. And every day as I came home from work, it would be a weight. It was a tension I felt in the lives of my sons and daughters. And now that they're grown, I pray for them. I pray for my grandchildren. But the responsibility now has passed to them.
Yeah.
And that weight is on their shoulder.
And I think it's significant, as you said, that you felt that weight, because I think there are parents today who would say, I've subcontracted that weight. I have, I'm expecting the church to feel that weight. I'm expecting the youth pastor to feel that weight and to take care of the discipling and the training and the teaching of my children. And I think what we're trying to say is there really needs to be a partnership here between the local church and the family, and they need to be doing this together. When I talk about a partnership, I'm not just talking about subcontracting. I'm talking about working together. And that's what's happening at your church, Steve, as you're bringing parents in and getting them involved. And that's the idea you're promoting in your book, Rethink, which I think both parents and youth pastors ought to be reading. We've got copies of the book here in our Family Life Resource Center. And if you'd like to get a copy to read first and then pass along to your youth pastor, or if you'd like to buy two copies and you keep one and pass the other one along to the director of student ministries, contact us here at Family Life. Go online at familylife.com. When you get to the homepage, on the right side of that homepage, you'll see a box that says Today's Broadcast. Click where it says Learn More, and that'll take you to an area of the site where you can order a copy of the book Rethink. And as long as you're ordering a copy of this book for yourself, get a copy of a book for your student as well. We've got copies of Alex and Brett Harris's book called Do Hard Things. That's a challenge to young people to step up and take their faith seriously now rather than saying, I'm going to take it seriously later. Do it now and do the hard things. Again, there's information about both of these books on our website at familylife.com. You can order them online if you'd like or call 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today, and we'll make arrangements to have the books that you're looking for sent out to you. Now, summer is winding down for most of you here at Family Life. What is winding down for us is our fiscal year, our financial year. It ends at the end of the month. And here over the next couple of weeks, we want to challenge you to consider making a donation to the Ministry of Family Life Today so that we can end our financial year in a good position. And we have had many of our listeners who have already contacted us to say, I not only want to make a donation to help you out here at the end of your year, but I want to challenge other listeners like me to get involved. We heard recently from a guy who is a truck driver, and he said, you know, I know a lot of truck drivers who are listening to Christian radio as they drive their trucks. They're just getting discipled every day, and programs like Family Life Today are making a difference. I want to challenge my fellow truck drivers to call in and say, I'm a truck driver and I want to help support the Ministry of Family Life Today. We also heard from a mother of preschoolers who said, you guys are really helping me as I'm in the thick of it with my kids at home. And I want to challenge other mothers of preschoolers to help support the Ministry of Family Life Today. Would you consider making a donation and then consider issuing a challenge to folks like you to also make a donation? And let's see if over the next couple of weeks we can't turn the heat up a little bit and end the financial year in a strong position. Thanks to those of you who have already given, and truck drivers and mothers of preschoolers, we hope to hear from you. Now, tomorrow, we want to invite the youth pastors who have been joining us for our conversation about youth ministry to ask their questions. We'll open the mics and we'll hear from them tomorrow. We hope you'll be back with us as well. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, and our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.